Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. Leaders speak on meeting their mission and making a difference. From enhancing economic opportunities for agricultural producers, to protecting the nation's food supply, to improving nutrition and health, the U.S. Department of Agriculture supports programs that touch the lives of all Americans every day. Here's its Deputy Secretary, Dr. Kathleen Merrigan.
It was created in 1862 by an act of Congress and signed into law by Abraham Lincoln, the president, and we refer to it as the People's Department. It's a wonderful place. It's a very big place. We have three big buildings right there on the Smithsonian Mall, but we also have offices around the country and around the world.
USDA is a big place with an expansive mission. Merrigan elaborates how her department makes a difference.
Well, the budget is about $145 billion. What people don't realize is that nearly two-thirds of that budget is for nutrition assistance programs. So people think USDA, they think farmers, ranchers, but actually we do food stamps, which is a supplemental nutrition assistance program. We are involved in the school meals programs, the National School Lunch Program, for example. So really, the bulk of our money is going to nutrition assistance. We are somewhere in the range of 114,000 FTEs. We are the fifth largest employer in the federal government.
Dr. Merrigan explains her role within the department and the challenges she faces.
As deputies are, they are alter egos to their secretaries. So I am there to advise, first and foremost, Secretary Vilsack on everything that comes before the department. Specifically, I am in charge of the budget process, budget formulation, tracking where the money goes, which is increasingly taking up time in this environment. I have a particular role in this administration to lead efforts on building local and regional food systems. Because of my background coming in, my interest, Secretary Vilsack asked me to lead an initiative. Coming in as a political appointee, I'm very cognizant of the sand running through the hourglass. That is a challenge not only for me, but all senior executives with all the things that are pressing upon us. How do we really have laser focus and know how to manage our time to those priorities? I think it's a really challenging institution to manage, USDA, because of the breadth of what it does and the challenge of the disconnect of what Americans know about American agriculture, because less than 1% of Americans now have experience, direct experience, being on the farm or the ranch. They don't really understand the broad mission of USDA. So we really have a sales job that we have to do both to the American people and to other policymakers here inside the Beltway.
How is USDA connecting people to its varied mission while promoting the country's agriculture? Here's Deputy Secretary Dr. Kathleen Merrigan.
Rural America has been in an economic freefall long before the rest of the economy. And when we came into this administration, Secretary Vilsack, a former two-term governor of Iowa, was very cognizant of the problems in rural America, the infrastructure needs, the lower incomes, the difficulty to access health care. We came into this administration saying we can't do everything. We have to have some strategies. One strategy is broadband access. If people had more broadband access in rural America, that would help with telemedicine, it would help with rural schools, and it certainly would help with entrepreneurialism. Small businesses of all kinds could be created. We're very focused on local and regional food systems as a way of creating job opportunities in rural America. There is a fervor in this country around local and regional foods that creates an opportunity. If we can help build some of that infrastructure that the smaller scale farmers could use to deliver local foods, that's a strategy that we're really high on. There's a lot of emphasis in this administration on green jobs, renewable energy specifically. And we're also very excited about recreation opportunities in our national forests and parklands. Finally, we're really high on ecosystem markets. We need to come up with ecosystem markets where farmers and ranchers and others get a benefit from using their resources in a way that helps overall ecosystem development. So when we talk about the Farm Safety Net at USDA, we have to be talking about more than disaster assistance programs. It's more than just that farm product. At the end of the day, it's about the vitality in those rural communities and whether people are going to run or raise a family there.
In the end, it's all about cultivating the vitality of every community, from rural to urban. In an era of fiscal constraint, marked by shrinking budgets and increasing demand on government services, government executives are confronted with very difficult choices. This situation is ever more acute in the delivery of human services to those most in need. Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor of Health and Human Services for the City of New York, spoke to us about how the city effectively delivers health and human services and the size and breadth of her portfolio.
It's pretty big. So it's about $20 billion of services provided by 9 different agencies. It runs from things that affect everybody in the city. Broadly, I think of it as the helping services for the city. We have a set of safety net services that can help people when a crisis arises and can structure our services in a way that can leave them sort of stronger and better off after that intervention happens.
Creating a more holistic approach to human service delivery can be quite challenging, as Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor of HHS for New York City, outlines.
You can't ever take your eye off the ball, is you constantly got to be problem spotting, mm-hmm. right? Sort of the added value and the obligation is to help anticipate problems before they happen, head them off at the pass so that you don't have a crisis, right?
Anticipating problems and finding new ways to solve them is key, especially in an era of fiscal constraint.
We lost our state and federal funding as a result of some state budget cuts, and we're left with the question of what are we going to do in order to deal with this crisis that's going to happen. From my point of view, the best way to do that kind of sort of thinking and problem spotting is you got to like create safe places for the experts who do the work and who know the dynamics to talk and to say what they think might happen and to let them, and so it's got to be sort of no bad ideas in this room. Right? So it's like by having a healthy conversation, you can usually identify the problems and at least have strategies for getting to them. That is the worst when you have a crisis that was an avoidable crisis.
New York City relies heavily on the nonprofit sector to deliver social services. It has a special relationship with this sector and has worked with nonprofits to navigate the recession. New York City Deputy Mayor Gibbs elaborates.
It's true that the social service nonprofit organizations are really critical in delivering frontline services. But in New York City, we are probably even more deeply dependent to thousands of nonprofit organizations that are the real folks that are delivering the services. We've had an extraordinarily productive and I think exciting set of initiatives that we've been rolling out in the city that are focused on nonprofit management and nonprofit improvement. And so it falls into a couple of categories. One is really focusing on how to help nonprofits be strong and resilient, an initiative we call Greater New York. And the focus of this initiative is really to improve the strength of nonprofit leadership and management, and to do that with technical assistance and a strong partnership with a successful business sector partner. Another really critical part is just helping nonprofits understand whether, you know, are they the good, the bad, or the ugly? We've developed a whole, again, through the use of technology, developing a set of indicators for nonprofits around their health, fiscal health, staffing, organizational, client service outcome health. The great thing about this is that it is actually connected to an initiative we have to streamline procurement in the cities.
The medical mission of the U.S. Department of Defense is to enhance DOD and the country's security by providing health support for a full range of military operations. It does this through its military health system. Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, explains.
The military health system is a worldwide enterprise. This year, we're looking at a budget of about $52.5 billion, and the military health system is made up of a large number of components. So we are obviously responsible for combat casualty care, but we're also responsible for what we call garrison care, which is a routine care anybody would receive, similar to that of a civilian sector with hospitals and clinics, primary care clinics.
Doing this requires significant resources and a focused and strategic leader. Here's Dr. Woodson on his efforts to make a difference.
We have about 140,000 folks who work within the MHS, but we have a network of over 350 to 380,000 practitioners who provide care to our people through the integrated networks that are established. So it's hospitals, it's clinics, it's combat casualty care, it's research, it's academics, it's a full-service health enterprise. As the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, I am the principal advisor to the Secretary of Defense on all matters related to military health. We're responsible for not only setting policy as it relates to issues in the military health system, but we're responsible for managing the Defense Health Program, which is that $52.5 billion pot of money that needs to be divided up to allow the services to execute the military mission. We, in concert with the services, set the priorities for the military health system, but the services really execute on that mission. So they train, man, and equip the force, and they actually deliver the care within the direct system. And then, of course, we have that insurance program called TRICARE, which provides an integrated set of networks with the civilian partners to deliver care to all of our retirees and beneficiaries and members of the service who may not be clustered around a base where you might have a military treatment facility.
To meet its ultimate mission, the military health system has adopted a strategic construct, the quadruple aim. Dr. Woodson elaborates.
The quadruple aim refers to our strategic goals of improving the patient care experience, improving population health, managing costs, that is being good steward of the public funds that they give to us to deliver care. And all of that is wrapped around our core mission of readiness. So what is so unique about the military health system, of course, is that we've got to be prepared to deploy and engage and support the troops deployed in harm's way in any part of the world at any moment. So anywhere, anytime, we've got to be ready to go. But what is so nice about the quadruple aim is not only does it give us a strategic focus, as it allows everyone within the system to understand where they need to focus their energies and their efforts and where we need to go.
Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, also offers some important advice for those considering a career in public service and how one person can make a difference.
Bring your intellect, bring your passion. Don't be dissuaded by, again, challenges, because it's when you meet those challenges that you learn the most about yourself and you grow the most. Be ready to operate in that gray zone. That's where all the fun is. Okay? If you knew and could predict the outcome of your efforts, that would be no fun at all. But it's about taking on these challenges and then creating enduring systems that benefit society far into the future.
I hope you enjoy the perspectives and the insights of government leaders presented in this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, on meeting mission and making a difference. My hope is to spark the imagination of government leaders to look beyond their day-to-day urgencies and reflect on the serious problems and critical challenges they face today into tomorrow. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.